So, I think it's time. Yeah, we'll start. Okay, so if you weren't in the last session, a little bit about me. Solution architect for Protiviti. We're kind of all over the place. I work in the SharePoint business consulting unit. I do all kinds of weird stuff with SharePoint, stuff that I don't think it was really meant to do. I'm one of the SharePoint MVP guys. I'm a techie guy for SharePoint. I dream about SharePoint. Like some of you guys from the last session that were there, you kind of nightmarish kind of dreams. Wake up screaming in cold sweats. Like, ah. If you want to follow me, I'm on Twitter. I have two accounts. Hello, it's Liam. And of course, my most favorite one, Hack SharePoint. I also actually own the domain, hacksharepoint.com, which is fantastic, which is currently connected to Office 365, which is great. And if you want to read the blog site, it's blog.helloitsliam.com. And I've posted some of the stuff we're going to talk about, I've already posted about before. So I kind of focus on one of my things I've focused on for the past couple of years has been security, because it's one of the really boring subjects that no one cares about. Like, no one used to care about security at all. And it's only because all these major shops are getting hacked that we now start to worry. Like, well, it's affected my pocket now. So we need to be secure. So one of my things I talk about is security. We talk about hacking. Hacking SharePoint, using other stuff and bits and pieces. But today, we're going to talk about Windows Azure, we're going to talk about SharePoint, we're going to talk about on-prem, online, and we're going to talk about multi-factor authentication, which we should all be using now. So what are we going to talk about? We're going to talk about the identity challenge, the challenge that we face as individuals and in the technology world. We're going to talk about assuring an identity of something and then how to make that stronger using some kind of security. We're going to talk about multi-factor options and where we choose the right one. We'll talk about on-prem multi-factor auth, and then we'll talk about online multi-factor auth. So that's kind of what we're going to flow through today, and we'll do some demos and things like that. So the identity challenge. What is this challenge that we face? The faceless interaction. It's quite intriguing. On the internet, nobody knows you're a dog. Isn't that so true? You have no idea. Someone sends you an email, it's from Steve. Oh, hey, Steve. How do you know that's Steve? Because it says it in his name. The email address says steve@company.com. For all you know, it could be Sue. You have no idea. It could be somebody completely random. It's this faceless interaction that we do. I have this conversation with my daughter sometimes where she's on the phone texting. And it's like she's not used to this face-to-face conversation. And those of you who have kids will know what I mean. Like, I ask her to make a phone call, and you'd think I'd asked her to, like, chop her arm off or something. You need to go and speak to them. I have to use my mouth? No, I'll text them. No, just talk. So there's no physical verification that takes place. We get stuff. Someone logs into the website. We don't know who that person is. We don't know if it's stolen credentials. How do you know that's the person who they say they are? We have no idea. And who is it that's actually accessing? Is it the clever dog using the keyboard? Because it's got to be true. It's on YouTube. Have you seen them? The dogs and cats that can do all kinds of stuff? And if it's on Wikipedia, it's definitely true. So how do you identify the legitimate user? This is the issue that we face. Is that a valid authentication request? Is it the actual person, or is it, I just wrote my credentials down for Steve so he can log in when he gets a chance? Because we all just share credentials at work, because at work, no one thinks that security is that important. So it's like, well, I can't get, I'll log in for you. That happens all the time. So what's the issue? The issue is it requires higher strength to do this, which involves money, time, and effort, and sometimes a complex solution to make that work. Also, issues if the account gets compromised, which what we talked about in the last session, things do get compromised quite quickly. And you've seen the whole bunch of them over this past year. And then, of course, there's concerns of privacy. So what else is the challenge? Identity theft. These are my friends over here, the anonymous-faced people. Isn't it really funny how they call themselves anonymous, but you will kind of find out who they are eventually. And they wear that mask, which is fantastic. Nope, that wasn't the one I wanted to press. Let's try that again. There we go. That was the stop button, by the way. So identity theft. This is taking that information. So when I moved I moved from the UK and came to Virginia, and about 3 months later, I received a bill for what is the equivalent of about $1,000 worth of cell phones. Like, now, why would I want $1,000 worth of cell phones? But apparently, somebody in England who obviously knew that we'd moved or had access to the house that we used to live in had obviously found some information about me and decided to open an account. They stole my identity and decided to purchase a bunch of equipment and have it shipped to the house. And the only reason I knew about it is because somehow they figured we had the Royal Mail Postal Service was redirecting mail from England to the US. That's the only way that I found out that my identity had been stolen in the UK, and they were just buying stuff and then shipping it to themselves, and the bills were coming to me. And so we get on the phone with the fraud squad and everything else, and now it's all been fixed. But it was so easy. Who knows what information they needed, but they apparently got the information just like that. We face this issue all the time. Sometimes the fraud, or whatever you want to call it, is from insiders. We all know about the whole Edward Snowden story. I think that's fantastic, don't you? The guy whose job it was to move stuff around to give to other officers. I mean, come on, you can't write this stuff, can you? So my job is to take these files and put them over here so you can get access to them. Yes. Copy over here. Okay, you've got them. I mean, how hard was that to do? Hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of thousands of them. But normally it's from insiders. The whole Bradley Manning, or Chelsea as he's called now, that whole idea was exactly the same. Internal insiders were the ones that steal the credentials. Or they're using fake credentials. They've somehow compromised the platform and we have fake credentials. Or you guys misconfigured it and you have a whole bunch of accounts like we talked about in the last session where you try to rename the administrator account and it's just called $admin or underscore admin or something that anybody with any ounce of brain power could figure out. So it's normally those. What are the effects of the identity? You will have seen this. You probably know people that did this. I said in the session earlier, my credit card was one of the ones that came through the whole Target thing. And they closed my account, which was really frustrating. There's nothing worse than getting a phone call from the fraud team that call you and say, we've closed your account, as I'm about to buy something. Really not helpful. They're like, it'll take 7 to 10 days to get you a new card. Yeah, thanks for that. So, but financial losses, damages. This is me. I'm number 3 on this list. Internet paranoia. Yes, I am. I am paranoid about every single one of you. No, I'm not really. I'm watching you. No. I'm that paranoid that in my house I have a Raspberry Pi that's configured as a Tor gateway, and all of my internet traffic goes through that. How sad is that? That I'm slightly paranoid that I have to do that. But yes, need for personal identity verification, need to protect identity information. These are the issues that we face. Like, how do you know that that person, that vendor that you gave access to your SharePoint environment is actually the vendor logging in? How do you know that? Well, we log all the traffic. Yeah, because you obviously look at that all the time. You have a live feed to your phone 24 hours a day. Oh, he's logged in. Nope, that's not him. What are you going to do? Take photos of them when they log in? NSA have been doing that for years. You log in, camera snap. GCHQ in the UK got told off about that recently. You've seen it in the news, where they were tracking webcams in people's and just taking snapshots of them to create an unofficial database. You know what kind of pictures came through there? That was not an unofficial database. So, identity assurance. What are we going to talk about? How do we ensure that this is the right person? Well, it's going to be proof of knowledge. Now, we do this right now. How do you prove that you are who you say you are when you log in? Well, you pass a password, don't you? It's a password. You know the password. That's your proof of knowledge. I can get in because I know my password. Or I know the PIN, the phone, the email, whatever it might be. Identity assurance for proof of possession is the next level up. They do this with banks. Or in some kind of high-strength organizations, you'll be using smart cards, tokens. We talked about the driving license last time. The driving license is your way of validating, well, this is I'm Liam, but my driving license also says I am Liam. So I can do a one-to-one map, and so the police officer can be happy that I'm not somebody different. But then there's proof of characteristics, and a lot of organizations have moved to proof of characteristics. This is biometrics, this is behavioral, this is retina scans, DNA, voice scans, physical presence. You have to physically be, you see it on the movies, don't they? They have to go and put their hand on the box, like, then they can get into something. That's what we're moving to. I worked for an organization in the UK for a while where they had fingerprint scanning and biometrics to get into that room. I tried a million times, but it didn't work. Every time you enter the US from outside and you go through customs, they make your fingerprint and everything else. Why? Because that's the only way that they can validate who you say you are. That's physical characteristics. That's how they map you, because your passport. So, if you go into the Tor network, not that I'm telling you to do this, but if you go into the Tor network and find the right web page, you can buy a passport for the United States of America for 10 grand. It'll be legit, obviously. I can buy American citizenship for $25,000. I have no idea how that works, but I was very tempted. Can buy you a driving license for any state for $250. And apparently they're good enough to pass. So we can get these. So even some of the proof of possessions are now no longer good enough. So we now need to go to proof of characteristics. So what kind of things do we do for stronger security? Well, the first thing we've got is we've got HTTP request and response attributes. We talked about some of this with ADFS, we talked about it for SAML. We're talking attributes that we inject into that process that make the security stronger. We can use hardware, software, one-time passwords and tokens. We're talking RSA tokens and all that kind of stuff. My bank uses RSA tokens to get into stuff. You get a one-time code and you can get into the account. Hardware, software, challenge response. Challenging the person that's there with something other than the information that they just stole because they managed to get your domain account. Domain account's fantastic. Breaking a password, not so complicated now. Because no one makes complicated passwords anymore. Because that means you've got to think about it. So what do? When your password gets expired in 90 days, you change the last, we'll put a number on the end. It's the same password as before. Password 123. What was the last one? 122. And because we don't like putting policies on to make the end user feel more complicated than it is, we leave it like that. And then we just add and add and add and add. So after 10 years, you're up to like password 1,010. Phone call based. This one's an intriguing one, because this means that we're now going to use a device that you would have to verify who you're going to be. And there's lots of options available to us for this one. Text based. Send you a text message and you have to do something with that. Whether it's a one-time code, whether it's something you have to type back in. PKI, this one's been used extensively. SSL certificates used, client-side, smart cards, the whole thing to say, well, I've logged in and now I put my certificate in and it lets me authenticate. USB smart card tokens, we talked about that. Biometric ones, we can now get smart cards that put biometric information on there, which would be fingerprints, retina scans. You know what? You'll find this funny. So we were talking to a friend of mine, and we were talking about the fact that you had to get a retina scan when you go through certain kinds of security, but you didn't call it the retina scan. It's the same word, but it begins with R, but it's nothing to do with eyes. So I'll let you figure that one out. It's to do with what you're sitting on right now. So we have a rectum scan. You are kidding me. Apparently we're all unique. I did not know that. But yes, we use smart cards and tokens and things, and then full-on biometrics. Every time something's secure on a TV show, CSI kind of thing, it's always biometrics. That seems to be the only way of actually validating that it's actually you. But obviously, that's not what you're going to do. You're going to send all of your vendors' biometric device to their house, so when they happen to log into SharePoint, they can rub their leg on it and sit on it or whatever else you want to do. I need you to do a DNA test, put it in there, and then we'll send it down the wire and it will check it to you before you can get in to look at the document that I want to share with you for the project we're working on. It's a bit extensive. So, multi-factor authentication is the answer. This is really what this is. All the issues of do we know who you are, where have you come from, what are you doing, are you the right person? Multi-factor auth is the only way. Making you, unfortunately, as the user, or your end users do multiple steps to get there. It's all about making it complicated for the hacker. The hacker's going to get bored if they have to figure out a username, a password, a PIN number, chop somebody's eye out to do the whole thing. They're going to get bored of that. It's not going to work. So that's why we choose multi-factor authentication. So we can talk about one-time passwords. We talked about this. This is the token base. There's a whole bunch of them over there. You probably even have some of these. These are the tokens that we use for authentication to be able to get through. You've got deliver password devices. So the HSBC one is the one that I have for my bank. And when I go to the bank, I put a username, a password, a PIN, I press the button, it generates a one-time. I put the one-time one in with the password on the end of it, and then I press submit, and then eventually it locks me out and I have to call them anyway. That's the process that you go through. But it's really secure because I can't even get in. So, I mean, those hackers have got no chance. So we've got deliver passwords, but we've got the USB, the key fobs, you've got the SMSs, the email, the phone, whatever else. What are the known issues? Well, of course, they're going to be the standard issues. Man-in-the-middle attack. Depending on what you use, I can sit in the middle still. And I can still intercept the traffic if I can do that. Phishing attacks. Still amazes me that we still have this problem. That you get an email. I get emails all the time. I don't have an account with Barclays Bank in the UK. They email me all the time. Dear Mr. Cleary, your account in Barclays is going through a security risk. Please click here to send us your password and a credit card. And because the bank would do that, wouldn't they? It's just common sense. You look at the email and go, I would never have to say that to the bank. So why are you filling the form in? And why don't you hover on the link and just look at the status bar? It'll tell you it's a 172.63. Whatever. That's not the bank address. Or open it in a Tor browser and just go for it. Or you're going to lose the tokens. Now, losing tokens isn't too much of an issue, but if there's anything that can tie that token device to what it's supposed to be used for, then that can become a problem. And of course, it's using the same kind of thing we talked about earlier, using the OAuth kind of idea, that we're abstracting you away, doing something, and then presenting back, so we're not actually passing credentials into the relying party, which at this point is SharePoint. So smart cards with PKI. These have been used a lot. Microsoft used these. There's a whole bunch of them. We can store biometric information. These are challenge response. We need public key infrastructure for it to actually work. So this is not always an option that gets used because you need to have a PKI infrastructure to make this. It's not like I can just give you a smart card and go, log in. What are you going to do, wave it at the screen? That would be sweet. It's like, it's me. You're going to need a smart card reader. It's going to be connected to the right thing. It's going to have to know what to do with it. So there's more infrastructure. So when you're building a site that requires third-party vendors or your partners to connect, smart cards are probably not going to work unless you're going to be shipping them some device that lets it do that. What kind of defense do you have against them? Well, they can be tampered with. They can be hacked with. I mean, come on. They've been swiping credit cards for years by just in restaurants in the UK years ago. They used to attach it to their foot right here and then just go, I'm just going to and swipe your card. Then your card would get cloned. You know what? I have to say this. This is just bizarre to me. For being here in the US, for a country that's completely paranoid about themselves, let alone anybody else, you go to a restaurant and you hand your credit card to some spotty teenager and he wanders off into the back somewhere and you don't care. He's just like, yeah, thank you, sir. And he wanders off and he comes back and he goes, I just bought some new shoes. Thank you, that'd be $20. And you have no idea. So trusting. Not so much now, apparently. Apparently not after the Target and all that kind of stuff. Everyone's like, oh, hold on a minute. It took that for something to change. We need to be on our guard and we need to look at this. So this is one, defense against tampering and hacking. This has been going on for years. That's why we use chip and pins. And of course you have the standards that we can adhere to. So biometric, where's biometric gonna help us? Well, this is going to be the highest level of assurance. We know who you are because we took a blood sample before you logged into SharePoint. That would be, can you imagine that? Hold on a minute. You are not. I can't get in again. Imagine all the holes in your fingers. Try that one. Trying to get in, that wouldn't work either. But you can use fingerprints, voice recognition, hand geometry, all the ones you see on the whole CSI thing, even down to writing and signatures and keystrokes. Stored on smart cards. They even use this in the military when they were trying to track down like high priority targets, they would arrest someone, and the only way they could do it was to do a biometric scan. I want to know, like, how they got the original biometric scan to map them against first. That's pretty impressive. But they did, like, sneak up on them and go, now we have him. Good, we'll get him later. So biometric credentials, you exchange that in a trusted, secure channel kind of idea. What are the issues? Well, it's not really secret, is it? We look at you and go, he's got brown hair. That must be a secret. You see it on movies, don't you? Like watching, what was the movie? Minority Report. Fantastic movie. Completely made up, quite clearly, but quite a good movie. Having eyes replaced so they wouldn't know who he was. But things like that, you know. Like, you know that if I want to get into a bank and you're the guy with the fingerprint to get into the bank, I just need your fingers. And we're not going to go down that route. I'm just going to convince you to come with me. Not encouraging that. But this is also vulnerable. There's lots of false acceptance and false rejects because, you know what it's like? You go, and I do it at the airport, and I do my fingers, and then it flashes orange, and the guy looks at me like I'm some random, like, you need to leave. And I go, I put it back on, and it goes green. And it takes me 3 or 4 attempts to get the fingerprint validation. So there's issues with that. You could just be just enough. And, of course, if you know the spies, they copy your fingerprints and then stick them over theirs. Because they want to get into SharePoint. That's what they do. Obviously. So, how does the authentication flow in a multi-factor process? So, relevant to what the process would be, obviously we're talking about Azure services, but let's look at the authentication flow. So, remember we got some similar diagrams the last time. I've got some AD and I've got a federated environment. So, I've got Federation, AD, multi-factor, SharePoint, and then there's me. Like we said, I dress up in blue a lot. So, there's a trust between everything on that right-hand side. So the authentication store, which in this case is AD, the multi-factor provider, which for now, let's just say it's Windows Azure, which is what we're going to use. And then we've got ADFS, or Federated Gateway, whether it's a custom identity provider or something else, or a third-party vendor, it makes no difference. And there's a trust between all of that and SharePoint. And the reason the trust is there is because it's using SSL certificates to secure the channel all the way through. So the only stuff... So it's a way of them each knowing that when something gets sent from here to here, it's been signed by the right token. It's not just, well, I made it up and I spoofed a certificate and things like that. So there's a certificate that's in place. It gets distributed and shared to the SharePoint environment. And so we're good to go. So remember we talked earlier, the first initial request to the SharePoint site or whatever it might be, it could be a .NET website or an application, is always anonymous. Even though you're logged in, it makes no difference, it's anonymous. So the first request goes, we obtain the login page from the provider, which for this one, let's just say it's ADFS, it's going to get the authentication page, it's going to request the security token, we're going to validate the credentials against Active Directory, because if we're just an internal user, it's going to come back and obtain a second factor mechanism for authentication and present that back to the client. So there's a piece that goes in that says, I validated to Active Directory. Hold on a minute, you need to do multi-factor authentication. It sends a request back and says, hold on, we don't quite trust you. Just because you validated against AD still doesn't mean I like you. So the client submits the second factor details, which could be a text message or something else, and it submits that directly into the provider. So I did a fingerprint, and it passes it all the way through to the multi-factor provider. The multi-factor provider will then accept that and validate it or reject it at that point and prompt for another mechanism, because you could configure it to say, well, if you get 4 attempts that are wrong, then either kick them out or present them something else. You've all seen that before. You've logged into something and not quite got it right, and it says, why don't you try answering the 4 questions that you filled in 27 years ago that you have no idea what the answers are. What is your favorite meal? Well, right now... But when I was 20, it was something different. So, but those are the things you have to remember. It then sends a security token all the way back, and then you get the security token, the authent token, and it sends the page back. Irrelevant of which architecture you design, which products, it's that flow. It's always request the application, auth at the source, prompt for the second factor, and send back. Going to a login page and asking for a password and a PIN code at the same time is not multi-factor authentication, just so you know. Because you have to pass both to get the original authentication. The whole idea of multi-factor is that you have to pass one to be successful before you present the second. I've seen this too many times where multi-factor is actually two things at one time, and that's just not how that works. Multi-factor is everything is defined as an individual process, so if one of those fails, you get kicked out. One builds on the next to the next to the next. Putting them all together is easy for the user to go, submit. Then you've got to figure out which one failed, which one didn't fail. And what's the combination? Are we going to do ands, everything together, or are we going to say, well, if that bit fails, then do this? So you can understand the logic. So true multi-factor is separate processes. So how does the Azure multi-factor process work? So let's talk about SharePoint on-prem. So I have a bunch of stuff on the screen. So I've got my Active Directory over here. I've got some stuff over here, my Azure stuff. I've got my SharePoint. I've got me. I've got my devices I'm connecting to. And I've got a telephone and a device that I want to connect to. So I'm going to request the application like before. I'm going to say, hey, go ahead and request my SharePoint site. I want to get access to it. I'm going to get prompted for AD credentials or a single sign-on. Relevant to, you know, if you're logged into the workstation, it'll be a post. Then the credentials get passed. Then the second factor service calls out to the cloud service. So remember that the Windows Azure service exists in the cloud, and so it's going to make a call out to the cloud to get that. So if you work in a high security environment, you may not be able to do this because you won't be able to make the call out to the cloud. But you can actually secure it down pretty well because you know the endpoint and you know you can lock down from an IP kind of idea. So it makes a call out to the cloud service, and then we'll return back whatever the mechanism that user has been added to. So for example, it could be the text message, it could be a text message plus a PIN, it could be a phone call, it could be the mobile app that's there, it could be any number of those, at least one, if not two of those, can be tied together to say, hey, you've logged in with AD, now present me something else. The client presents the second factor from the device or the phone, which is why I've got the phone and the device. It's validated from the client, the application is accessed, and then you're able to get through that process. But there's a very clear demarcation in how you get to that process. SharePoint site, authenticate, multi-factor, do something with it, or get denied access. And if it doesn't get through, you don't get in. And we can do a whole bunch of stuff like disable accounts and things like that. So what about if it's online? Because obviously we're all using Office 365 now. No one's using on-prem anymore, are they? Like, no. Why would you not use 365? Well, there's a whole bunch of reasons. But so we have the same kind of design. The same design. We've got my SharePoint application, but it's in the cloud. I've got my 365. I've got my authentication store, whatever it's going to be. So I request the application. I get prompted for credentials, which will come from 365, which is actually hidden behind the back of Windows Azure Active Directory, which is what you're actually connected to under the covers. It's going to go and prompt me for credentials, which is that wonderful identity provider page where you put the email address and the password in. And then when you get into that, it then goes to the identity mechanism for multi-factor, returns that mechanism you've provided, which for SharePoint Online is very straightforward. You don't get the whole selection of choices that you get on-prem. You're actually tied to a very specific way of coming in. I'm sure that will change in the future, but right now it's tied to the specific ones. The second factor mechanism is delivered back to the client. The client presents and fills the details in. The client gets validated, and the application is accessed. So it's the same flow. It's just it's all built in a little bit nicer. The administration is a little bit easier. Sorry, yes? For the multi-factor. So the question was about using trusted devices for multi-factor authentication. So the devices themselves don't need to be trusted at all. For SharePoint Online, they don't care that the devices are an Android app or something else. There's no trust involved in those devices. It's purely down to the phone number that you get registered. Yep. You won't be able to use that in here. If you assign multi-factor authentication, then you'll have to use it, whether it's a trusted device or not a trusted device. However, if you're using on-prem, you have more control. So you'll be using something like ADFS, the new version, which has trusted devices, and a device can be the second factor authentication. So you have an AD credential and you do workplace joining with a device, and they both work together. But for SharePoint Online, it's a little bit more complicated. They don't let you do that. Okay, so how do we set this thing up? So SharePoint Online, we're going to go through this in a second. So Office 365 Admin Center, there's a magical button. It's called Setup. I know. Set, and it's called Set Multi-Factor Authentication Requirements. You click in the Setup option, it's going to present a list of names, and it even tells you that it's disabled or not disabled. You select the account you would like to enable. You enable the account for multi-factor, which I'll show you in a second. Then you log in as that user, or you tell that user to log in, and then they have to go through an enrollment, a little piece that needs to get done, which is, I need to set this up. So what's supposed to happen is, I create a new account, and I then set up the email address for that account. And what I then do is I say, I need to set up multi-factor. It will have emailed that person with their temporary password. They'll go to the site, log in with that temporary password. They'll create their new password, and then when they try to log in, it'll stop them and say, oh, you need to do multi-factor authentication too. And then they have to go through that process. So we'll go through that in a second. The portal login process is very straightforward. You hit the Office 365 login page, which looks fantastic, just username and password box. Type those details in, and then what's going to happen is when you say you'll get the Setup Now link at the bottom once you've logged in, which is there, the Setup Now takes you through the process of saying, what's your cell phone number, what country are you from, and do you want to send me a code or do you want to call me? Now, just so you know, just from experience, the call-in option is great if you have decent cell phone signal. Text messages seem to work way better. I was testing this earlier to make sure it was going to work in the room, and I got like 3 voicemails from Office 365 telling me I needed to press the pound key to carry on. That doesn't help me when I couldn't get in. So I changed your text messages and it came through. So we're obviously limited on how you can connect to those devices. But it works pretty well. So once you've done that, then it's going to say verify. So this is you, the end user, going to go in and say, well, verify that this phone number works. It'll send a message to the phone or a call. You'll then either press the pound key or you'll type in a code into the phone, and it will then verify ready for multi-factor authentication. Then you get something like this, which is that it'll say, here's your Microsoft sign-in verification. Type this back to me. Now, if your end users can't do this, they got slightly bigger issues if they can't type back those 6 numbers right there, exactly the same as they were before. So this is very straightforward. You put it in, it specifies that, you type that in, you type the number in, you click verify, it comes back and says, ta-da, successful. And then from that point forward, it then comes back and it asks you to something to do with apps. Because, of course, everything is now an app, irrelevant of where it resides. So this is all to do with not being able to use multi-factor authentication properly in applications that are not really web-based. So specifically for 365, like Link and Exchange, if you want to use multi-factor authentication for those two, then you need to generate an app password, which effectively is an OAuth token that gets passed backwards and forwards. So I'm not going to focus on that bit today, but you can read about that. They published some new stuff on TechNet the other day about that. So what about on-premise? The on-cloud bit was really straightforward. How do we do on-prem? Well, we have to configure the authentication provider. So this is going to be using, I'm going to be using Active Directory, because obviously it's out of the box, straightforward. I need to select what kind of usage I want to use. I'm going to go in and say I want to link that to an Active Directory of some description. I could do that. I'm going to download my authentication software. There is an install that needs to get done of the MFA software. You download the server components. You go into the web browser and generate the activation credentials, which is a one-time 10-minute window. So what you don't do is download the software, click generate, wait 10 minutes while it installs, and then try to activate, because you have to generate new credentials at that point. So you install it and then generate. I'll show you what it looks like when it's in. Then you configure the multi-factor authentication service. So we activate using those credentials that we've got. We configure the users, and we choose what we're using for authentication. So I'm going to use ADFS because I have that installed, but you could be using Radius. It could be direct into IIS. It could be just tied to a Windows account and just Windows authentication. And you can configure various options to allow multi-factor authentication in other stuff than just SharePoint. So we have the ADFS implementation. We're going to go ahead and install the ADFS adapter, which is part of that application. You're going to select the methods you want to allow for ADFS. We're going to configure the multi-factor settings, which I'll show you in a second. Then you have to run some Voodoo Magic PowerShell, which goes in and says, register multi-factor authentication ADFS adapter. Could they have made that any longer? But you run that, and it registers the multi-factor authentication process directly into ADFS. Yes, yeah. And so you tile that directly into that, and then your ADFS will then be able to use the multi-factor. So let me just clarify that. You can use this with 2010. This is related to the specific version of ADFS, which comes with Server 2012. And I'm using 2012 R2 for that. So you can still use this mechanism for a previous. You configure the ADFS rules, and you go into the global settings for the ADFS provider that you have, and say, I want to edit the multi-factor authentication, and then say, because when you ran this one, it registered a provider that ADFS can use. So when you go and say, edit the multi-factor options, which is now in ADFS 3, which is what the new version is, you can then say, I now want to do multi-factor, and then define the locations and the security groups you want to assign it to. And then you go through the login process, and you go through the same multi-factor wizard that you would have went through before. So let's have a look at it online. Yes. It's for registered accounts inside your Office 365 environment. They have to be registered as an account. Yeah. So I have some accounts. Just making sure I'm signing this one up. Yep. So I'm accessing my Office 365 environment. So I'm going to go and pick my user, which is a guy called Richard. He was asking about when you do sharing with Office 365 to an external account, whether you can apply multi-factor to that. As if they're not registered as accounts technically inside the 365 UI, you can't assign that to them. So I'm just going to click on this one. Click sign. I timed out. Nice. See if I fix that one. Just a refresh. Isn't it great that we've moved over to web technology for everything? With the limitations of... Hold on a second. So what's going to happen now? One of two things is going to happen. My phone's either going to ring, or I will change it and get a text message. Okay, we'll use text me. So see the options? I can say text me or call, and there's... It decided to call me after all. So I've now received the text message, which now has a number, which I'm going to type in, which is 7630. It's only a one time, so you can't copy it. And I click sign in. Wait for that to do its thing. I think that was right. Yep, there we go. And now I'm logged into my SharePoint site. So the text message is right there. I know you can't see it, but it's right there. And yes, I am using an iPhone, not one of those Windows phones. So it sent me a text message. I was able to go in and get straight into the site. So how do we go about that kind of configuration? How do we get that to work? So let me just flick screens, and then we'll come back. And now I have a voicemail from Windows Azure. Great. Okay, so when I log into my SharePoint site, when you come into the main admin center, you'll see we have users and groups. We're going to select the groups. And so I'm going to pick my Virginia Smith. And you'll see that we've got this select multi-factor authentication requirements. I can click on setup. This will then go through. And did you notice that even though you selected a user, it doesn't show the user on this page? Fantastic design. So what you have to do is do sign in aloud. And it lists the users. And of course, the first account I logged in with was a guy called Richard Hill. And it's enforced because I've already enabled that. I'm going to go to Virginia Smith. And you'll see that I can do enable. And when I click enable, it's going to say, hey, what do you want to do? I want to enable multi-factor authentication. I'm going to click on it. Done. How cool was that? Took like 2 seconds. My account's now ready. And when you click back on it, you can disable it or you can click the enforce option. Now, by default, if that end user is trying to log into Link or something else and you want the multi-factor to work, it's not going to work for that account now. So that's when you need to generate a specific app. And you would do that by clicking enforce, and then you get the message about the non-browser applications. Users will need to create an app password. And so at that point, you'll say, I need to enable this. I'm not going to for this, but you enable this, and it just generates the one-time password key that you need to use. And then you're able to use that as a multi-factor. So I just logged in with that account. Let me flick back to my other screen. And let me just sign out. And let me log in as Virginia Smith. Yes. It's associated to, well, up in 365, then no, because it's part of your subscription that you would have, depending on the plan that you've got. But if you're not, if you're using on-premise, hold on a second. Okay, there we go. If you're using on-premise, then you have to choose from your authentication, multi-factor authentication provider, what you would like to have. And I'll show you that in a second so you can see that, how it's tied to your Azure subscription. Okay, so I enabled multi-factor authentication, but this end user hasn't set anything up yet. So we enabled it, I came to the site, and now it says set up now. So I'm going to click set up. And what's going to happen is you'll get a correlation ID that just says, not going to happen. So let's try that again. Just a refresh of the browser. Okay, so it now sends us to the screen where we can decide what's going to happen. So I can say I want to set up my office phone or I want to set up the mobile app. Now, the mobile app, you can get it from the iOS store, from the Windows store. It's just the multi-factor authentication. It used to be called Phone Factor, but it's the MFA app. You can download that, and then what you can do is you can say configure the app, and what it will do is it goes ahead and sends you this. So you're able to come in and scan it. Then it registers that special unique number that it generates for you, which is the 951786 kind of code, and the URL, which is unique, ties the two together so you can then register. I can see you trying to do it. Someone's trying to check it from the back to see if it'll work. But you can go ahead and scan that. And literally, if you have the app, you could scan that right now, and it would register that. Obviously, you don't know the password to get in with the account, so that's not going to help you. But it registers it. And then if I went back into the end user configuration and said, use the mobile app, that means all it would do as soon as it was done, it would prompt me for something, and I would type that into the mobile app, and then I would be able to authenticate. So we don't need to use text messaging. We don't need to use anything like that. If I go back, I'm just going to use mobile phone, and I'm going to choose United States. And as much as I love you, that's not going to happen.
Windows phone app only.
Yeah.
The MFA app, is that the Windows phone app only?
Yes, yep. There's an app for iOS and for Windows.
Oh, okay.
And I think there's one for Android too. So I'm just going to set this up to send me a code. Because there's much. Because I don't really want to give you my phone number. Nothing personal. Okay, so. Let me just sit this back. So what's happened now is I've typed in my phone number. I click verify. It then sent me another text, and it says, type this code into your application, which is another one. So 908206. And I can click verify. And it's now successful. So at this point, I can then go ahead and generate those app passwords that I need for the applications if you're trying to use that. I'm not going to. I'm just going to say don't use it. And then it's going to log me back in, and I should be able to access my Office 365 logged in as that individual. So the process is really straightforward for Office 365. There's nothing for you to do. You just literally go in and say, check, 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 enable, 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 good to go. Now, if we were to go to on-premise, then it's a little bit more complicated. So let me go to on-prem. I'm going to get rid of that. And if we go to Active Directory. So I'm going to go to my Windows Azure subscription. And obviously what we can do is in the Active Directory tab, we're able to go in and configure Active Directories, ACS namespaces, and also multi-factor authentication providers. So if I click on New, I'm going to go through the process, but I'm not going to configure it. What you'll see in the process is that I'm able to go in and say, what name do you want to give it, and then your usage model. And that's where you would define the usage model on a per individual basis. So you have a per user or a per authentication process. And there is a charge that's associated to that. Right now, they've been wavering the charges for a while. But just like anything else, there'll be a charge that'll come for using that service. I obviously associate it to my Windows Azure Visual Studio one. Now, notice I can link it to a directory. Now, for those of you that might be doing Active Directory on-prem, synchronized up to Active Directory in Windows Azure, then you can actually tie those two together. So you can go in and say, well, I've got my Windows Azure AD in the cloud. I can then associate everything together with a specific directory. I didn't do this for this one because I wanted to use my on-prem. So I have my multi-factor authentication provider called Does Not Exist. I'm going to click Manage. It's then going to take me to a different website, which is underneath the phone factor. And we're actually sent over to the multi-factor authentication configuration screen. Over here, we have all the settings. You can configure things like caching, the phone number that you want to use that comes to the phones. So think of that logic when you're building it on-prem. It would be nice to be able to say, well, what's that phone number that keeps calling me? It's 866 blah, 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 blah. If I look at the phone, I don't recognize it, I'm not going to answer the phone. You don't want your end users to not answer the phone when they're trying to log in. So you can go in and, for example, if it's a corporate device, you can go in and specify a specific number that comes out as the caller ID and then add that as a contact to say multi-factor authorization. So when it comes up, they know exactly what that means. It's a way of making it easier. So we can go through the process. We can configure. Excuse me. If we click on downloads for the server, you'll see that what is supported for the multi-factor authentication platform, notice it's not just Windows Server 2012 R2. It's all of those are supported in those builds. Now, if you look at the page, the download link isn't exactly glaring at us. It's like a second link just to say, hey, maybe you want to download it. If you can't see it, it's right there or over there. So we click the download link. That'll download the MFA server software, which is, it's not very big, but you download that onto the server machine that you want to run that from. Now, you don't need to run it on the SharePoint server. Just so you know, doesn't need to go there. You should have a dedicated MFA server, or if you're running ADFS, in my environment here, I actually run the MFA server directly on the ADFS box because I want the two tied together, and that's my federated architecture server. So once we've downloaded everything, I'm going to go in and say generate activation credentials. And what this one will do, this will give me a random password and a specific admin account. This is good for 10 minutes. You can't use it for anything else apart from the registration of the MFA software. And all that does is that then ties this multi-factor authentication endpoint in Windows Azure directly to the MFA software that you've installed on the servers. It's 3 only for this one because it needs to make a change to ADFS because ADFS 3 supports the multi-factor built out of the box. So if I go to my multi-factor server, and what we end up with is we end up with this. We end up with this server here. Now, in my environment, I actually installed it onto 3 servers. because I was playing around with some other bits and pieces. I was trying to use Windows and IIS to do authentication for different bits of SharePoint without using ADFS. So I actually have three servers with MFA on. And if I wanted to, I could actually have them load balanced, distributed. So if all of your corporate users are coming in trying to access it, it's going to be load balanced all the way through. So we have it all configured. We can add the status, obviously tells me it's connected and tells me that one of those is online. Now, if we click on users, because that's what you really care about, where are we going to get the users from? Well, the software is installed on a machine that's on the domain or on a machine somewhere that can have a connection to a domain to bring those users in. So if I go to import from Active Directory, you'll see that my directory exists here. If I had more than one domain, my domains would exist. So I can go and pick the domains, and I can go all the way down and expand my OUs, and I'm going to pick user accounts, and I have some test users, so 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, and I'll do number 10. So I've got these users that I want to import into my application. Now, we're not doing authentication at MFA, so I don't think we have to do, well, we're going to have passwords here and passwords here. What we're actually doing is having a reference point from Active Directory into the MFA server, so when an end user comes in, there's a one-to-one mapping between that user account and what's coming in. So we're not having separate authentication stores. So once you've got them, you can then define how you want that to work, which properties from the Active Directory you would like to import and use as the default mechanism for the phone. You can then go in and say, do we want to use a standard phone call, a text message? Do I want a text message that's a responder plus a PIN code? Because you can then say, well, type in this number, 9678123, and your PIN code at the back of it, and then you'll get accepted, like an RSA token does. Or do you want to use the mobile app? Or are we trying to use something where we're using OAuth tokens? That's a whole separate conversation right there. Being able to use an OAuth token from some other application to authenticate via multi-factor authentication from somewhere else. So if we put it down as text messaging, for example, and just use regular ones from there, or I could use a PIN. If I select PIN, I can generate a unique PIN for each person, or I can actually go in and type a PIN and say your four-digit code is whatever it's going to be. So you have access to that. And of course, we have access to all the languages. So if you're from a different country and you want to use a different language and have the text message come in the native language of where it's coming from, then based on, you can specify the settings for those individual users and say, I want it all to turn up in Spanish or French or whatever it might be. And they have a vast selection of languages. So if I'm going to click import, oops, I chose to use PIN. Let me just do that. Click import. Okay, my seven users have been imported. If I close that, my seven users now exist. Now what you can see is my users are now in, and I can see them, that the name, the email address, the phone numbers, which is my cell phone number. Yeah, I know. Which means it's now on video for the entire world to see. Which means I'm going to get a whole bunch of text messages now. But you'll see that it's there. You'll also see how it's what it's configured for. So if I go into like my test account, I can actually choose test at this point. So what test allows me to do to prove that this works, it allows me to type in the username, my password, and the Windows domain, and click test. So I'm going to go into here, type in a password, click test, and I actually got my own password wrong. It would have if I could type, wouldn't it, really? Oh, ignore me. That's me typing the wrong password. I was thinking I was typing on Office 365 then. Okay, so I just got another text. This time, it says reply with the verification code to sign in to the multi-factor authentication. So this is where me as an end user, I should be able to type the number that's right there. Send. Done. Authentication. That's pretty quick. I just responded via text, and instantly I'm authenticated. So we know that that works. So how do we tie it to ADFS now? So I imported the users. The users came in. I can test, respond to a text. Everything works great. What I now need to do is go to the ADFS tab. Now, obviously, I already have the ADFS tab installed. That would say install adapter. You run the install. It's a separate install. You go through the wizard. It just installs something in the background, and then you run the PowerShell. But what we can do is go through the process and select what we would like the end user to do. We want to allow user enrollment, or you may not want to. You may want to pre-configure everything for the end user so they don't get the setup now kind of idea. They just have to do stuff. You can allow the users to select the mechanism they would like to authenticate with. So do you want to send me a text? Do you want to call me? Do you want to use the mobile app? Now, the only downside to the mobile app is you need to go through all the configuration process of what that URL would be, and there's a whole bunch of web service pieces that need to be installed to make that work. So normally phone calls and text messages become the easiest option. So now that we have that, we've installed it, I run the PowerShell, and then my ADFS, which sits right here, I'm going to go to my authentication policies in my ADFS, and you'll see that I have edit global multi-factor authentication. And what you should see right here at the bottom, it says, oops, Windows Azure multi-factor authentication. That's what that PowerShell does. The PowerShell registers this as an authentication provider to be used by ADFS. Now notice it has other options. These options here are actually part of ADFS 3. They're not in ADFS 2 at all. This is allowing me to say, well, when devices come in and they're registered devices, then make this happen. Or if they're unregistered devices, this comes back to multi-factor authentication using username and password for AD and a device and Windows Azure together. So you now have to have all three to be able to pass that. Yes. Yeah, the same kind of thing the CAT card would use. Then you've got the required, then you can say MFA is required from specific locations. So there's two locations, extranet and intranet, and you define what your relying party resides in and say this is the extranet, this is the intranet, and you can then define how that works. But more importantly, you can do this. You can specify specific groups, users that this applies to. Because there's nothing more annoying as the admin that you've got to keep getting a text message to log in every time. So you can say, well, you know what? I just want to use this security group, which is my test accounts, and they all have MFA, but I don't. Because I'm an admin. Why do I need that? You are the security people. You don't need to do multi-factor, because you would never have bad passwords or anything like that. So once it's all configured, you can see that we have the multi-factor. I'm going to click OK on that one. If I wanted to, I can go into per relying party now, which is also available. So I just modified the global settings, but if my ADFS was using multiple applications other than SharePoint, and we didn't want that, we could simply come into the relying parties, click on them when we wanted to, and edit the multi-factor authentication settings for that specific. So if you have a SharePoint farm that's got multiple web apps, you don't want it on all of them, you may just want it on a specific one. So you can come in and do that. If you're going to do that, don't edit the global one like I just did. Just edit the one that you need to, because everything from the global comes all the way down, and then you can just tweak afterwards. So what does that look like for the end user? So I'm going to go to my IDP initiated sign-on page. I'm not logging into SharePoint yet. So if you haven't seen ADFS 3, the login page looks like that now, not that stupid white one with the weird text at the top. It looks like the Office 365 one. And I'm going to click sign in. It's going to ask me for my account. And I'm going to use test user 1 at. And click sign in. And then my experience from ADFS is now a little bit different to the 365 one. You now have more flexibility in how we configure this. So I can go in and say, I need to send a text message. It's a good job I pay for unlimited text messaging. So it's now going to ask me to reply with this text. 651894. Okay, and I'm now signed in. So that was my simple test. Simple sign in straight away. Now obviously if I've not signed in, and if I'm using a different account, So if I do sign in and do test user 3, this one is now going to place a phone call, which I'm not going to try because I'll probably get 10 voicemails again. But it'll place a phone call to me where it'll ask me to type the pound key. Obviously, I'm going to cancel that and not do that. Okay, let me just come out of that one. So how does that look in the SharePoint world? So let me go to my SharePoint site. So I'm using my internal SharePoint. Obviously, 2013 has a slightly better looking realm picker, just not a lot to it. I'm going to pick my ADFS implementation. My ADFS says, oh, hold on a minute. You were logged in as test user 2 because you logged in previously. You need to do some multi-factor authentication. And it prompts me at this point. And another one. 8, 6, 7, 3, 8, 9. Send. And apparently I'm not allowed to sign in. Don't you just love that? No, I am signed in. That was me typing the wrong number. that was me doing the end user thing of not being able to type. Okay. ADFS. You know, there were times when you write stuff and you think, I should have used shorter names. Shorter names and shorter passwords would have been way nicer. So let me get another text message. So the key is, if you're using this, you have to have unlimited text. 2, 4, 9, 6, 7, 1. And there we go. And I'm in. Seamless process, text message respond, straight into the SharePoint environment, and I have various permissions. So the on-premise one is actually a little bit richer than you would have had before. Now, one thing you can do, which is quite nice also, is you're able to implement... Sorry? Just a regular AD logon. So you can set up multi-factor to use regular Active Directory logon. You have to select, instead of me using ADFS, which was part of the configuration, you would use IIS or you use the Windows authentication piece. It's a little bit more complicated. There are some limitations on how it works, but what's supported for SharePoint is ADFS instead of trying to hook it into IIS. If it's not a SharePoint environment, then you can do all kinds of stuff. You're just limited to the way SharePoint works right now. But yeah, I mean, you could definitely use Windows authentication for that. So there's also a website that you can actually install into the SharePoint environment, which allows users and the administrators. Let me just expand this. It's called the Users Portal. And it's a web-based portal. Let me just browse. See if it's going to load for me today. But this is configured while that's loading in the background. There we go. This is configured from inside here. You'll see that we have user portal. And the user portal allows us to specify what the end user can actually do. Because you don't want to be administrating everything. Or maybe you do. Or maybe you want to allow the end user to go through a self-enrollment. So I can go in and say, I want to allow them to do enrollment. I want to allow them to do bypass seconds to get over a login to say, well, I just bypass it for the next 20 seconds or whatever so I can get in. Or to go through and specify what they want to log in with to use them to use the mobile app. You can allow end users to log into that website. That website is configured here. I'm just going to log in as the administrator. Yep. to get into this website or just in general? In general. So the way that OAuth one, it's a little bit more complicated, the OAuth one, but you can register OAuth tokens from other applications, and then it basically passes it as an attribute when you go to log in. You say, this is my OAuth token that's being passed across. For the SharePoint stack, you wouldn't need to use that. But for other applications that you would come across from, you would potentially want to use that coming across. Let's see if I get my password right. This is where I find out. I knew it. Hold on a second, that's another text message. So the lesson today is if you're the admin, turn off multi-factor authentication. So, especially when you're doing demos. So it means I can come into this web page, I can go in and add users, I can add specific users here if I wanted to, I can go in and do change in the methods from a text message to the mobile app. Everything that you saw in the admin console that gets installed, you can more or less do inside here. You need to provision this in IIS on a website somewhere, and you can use your end users can then use that. You can also allow them to change any security questions that you might have assigned. So there's a list of security questions, you know, what color's your hair, what size your shoe, and all that kind of stuff. You can add those, and then when an end user gets one or more failures to log in, you can do a failover back and present four questions that need to be answered. So it's not like you're stopping end users getting in, but you have the flexibility to kind of say, well, hey, we think we know who you are, but you need to answer these questions instead. So the question was, is there a policy to say you can have the questions come up specific points in the day or whatever it might be? There's not a policy like that. You can force it to just present a question every single time, but there's not one that says, like, once in a while or just an extra verification kind of thing. There's not that right now.
What kind of implementations do you see for frontline employees who may not have phones available?
I like that. So if you don't have a phone... If it's on-premise, then yes, it would probably be out of Active Directory, whatever phone was registered to that device. You can import other phone numbers, but obviously you would then have to give your cell phone number. Well, I don't want it. So for example, we do, like our cell phone numbers that we have, because we're the bring your own device, weirdness. But we have our own phones, and so our own phones are our corporate cell phones, but they're ours. So lots of organizations have moved to that, so it's a little bit easy to say, well, here's my cell number. But yes, if you don't, it doesn't have to be a cell phone number. It can be a regular desk phone. It can be whatever it's going to be. You just can't use the text mechanism.
Right, if literally, if it's a frontline employee that's not...
If they have nothing... No, so there's no static. You can have it so it's a PIN number.
Yep.
So you can say, this is the PIN number that I've assigned, you know, six digits, and that's what they use to get in every single time. So that's about the most that you can do. It's not scaled enough yet to be able to handle, you know, people who don't have a cell phone. Yeah, that's right. I mean, once you get to that, then you're looking at third-party components to kind of add into that equation. Okay, which one I need to be on? That one. Okay, so from a deployment, what are the advantages? Well, the advantages are you get to register users' phones. And for a business, that's great. So you have the phones, and there's some kind of application-specific configuration needs to be done. There's some support dependencies, which you need to worry about, just like with Active Directory. Credentials, I forgot my password, my RSA token doesn't work, I left my stuff on a train somewhere. You're still going to have that issue where you're going to need to do forgotten pins, and what happens if your phone gets stolen? Like, how are you going to handle that? So there's still this administration that needs to get done. User registration, phone numbers must be associated to be able to enable that authentication process. So there must be a phone number it gets registered to, because there's no way of verifying that authentication without a phone. Once you've got to that point, then you can use, you know, PIN numbers and all that kind of stuff, but you actually need to use a phone. On-premise phone numbers get stored in Active Directory. That's where you suck them in from. And then Windows, Azure, and SharePoint Online, they're just self-sourced. You just put those into the profile, unless you're doing a synchronization. So if you're using DirSync, for example, and you're synchronizing out to Windows, Azure, and then across to use this, then obviously that can get synchronized up into the cloud. The registration portal, which is what we looked at, SharePoint Online, that's just completed by Windows, Azure. You don't get the same functionality that we saw in that portal or in the application that's installed. This is very limited up in there. SharePoint on-prem, you obviously have to install that. You install it into the IIS website. You're probably going to load balance it so you can get access to it, and then the end user or just the admins can get access to that. So there's a richer experience on-prem than there is in the cloud because they're not going to offer that right now. So in summary, it's very simple and easy. Obviously, Office 365 is a piece of cake. Really straightforward. You just click Setup, Enable, and it's done. But that's about it. There's nothing else you can do with it. But on-prem, there's a little bit more complication, things you need to put into place. And it's integration into multiple mechanisms for authentication. The on-prem and the online experience is more or less the same. From an end-user perspective, it's the same. If I go to my extranet in 365, it's going to ask me for a username and password, and then some multi-factor option. If I go my on-prem SharePoint, and it's configured the same way, I get the same experience every single time. And there's no tokens, none of the numbers generating tokens. There's nothing to lose. You don't lose an RSA token lying around. It's a one-time thing every single time. It's a unique number for you at the moment that you click login. And then it's gone. If I'd not put that number in quick enough, it would have timed out within the space of 30 seconds, and I wouldn't be able to get back in again. I would have to then reissue the request and send me another text message. And of course, there's no training. Of course there's training. Of course you've got to train everybody how to use it. But no, not really. There's no training. It's as simple as respond to a text message or put this number in the web page or type this PIN or whatever it's going to be. So this is a great solution and scenario for actually doing multi-factor authentication. Obviously, the limitations are going to be if your environment is secure and you can't access services out in the cloud, then this is not the option for you. And you're looking at third-party platforms to be able to do that for you. So remember to go to MySPC, evaluate the session, things like that. And thank you for coming to the session. If you have any questions, I'll be at the front.